be open to conversations and thinking outside of the box and having conversations with other people that maybe you wouldn't always have those conversations with. Because I think there are plenty of people who are sitting at home who have ideas and resources, and they want to help as well.
Today's episode is brought to you by Relic. As many of you know, I own an advertising agency called Relic, and we work specifically with tourism destinations. If there's any of you that are struggling with what to do next, or you've tried agencies that don't specialize in tourism, or if you've been using the local flavor for years and years and you're just looking for something new, I would say give us a call. Give us the opportunity to take a look at your plan, see what you're doing. Use our tourism knowledge and industry specialty to examine everything from your brand to your tactical execution and make recommendations of how to help. We'll do that assessment for free. We'll give you those recommendations for free. And if you like what we say, maybe you can hire us to execute on those plans. So kind of a risk-free opportunity to have us take a holistic look at everything you're doing, provide some recommendations, and you can kind of see us in action. If you're interested in having us do something like that, please send me an email directly at adam@relicagency.com. I would love to set that up with my team. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Destination Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Stoker. I'm excited to be with you today. As you know, I've been on the road the last couple of weeks, taking our show on the road, and we have been in the southeastern United States. We went through Tennessee last week, Alabama earlier this week, and now we find ourselves in Oxford, Mississippi. And I'm really excited to have our guests on today. Oxford is one of my favorite places in the world, whether it's their golf course out by the university that I've played many times, or the dining establishments that they have, or just the atmosphere of their square downtown. It is an amazing place. So we have two people from Visit Oxford's office with us today. We have Nadia Thornton, who's the sales and marketing manager, and then we have Kenny Ferris, the executive director. Welcome, you guys.
Hey, Adam.
Hey, Adam. Thanks for having us.
Oh, thanks so much for joining us. So I want to first have each of you say which one you are, because it's audio only, right? And so that people can kind of get used to your voice and put the voice with you. So do you want to introduce yourself and your role and how long you've been here?
Sure. I'm Nadia Thornton. I'm the sales and marketing manager, and I have been here since the end of January. So right before COVID hit.
Just in time.
Right.
Awesome. Kenny, how about you?
So, I'm Kenny Ferris, and I've been with Visit Oxford since 2009, so a little over 10 years now.
10 years is a long time. That's great.
It is a long time, you know, a decade, but now I've only been the director for a couple of months. Again,
Just in time.
So things have been exciting, to say the least. So, yeah.
Well, we're going to get into that. We're going to talk all about not only Oxford as a destination, but also what your experience has been like with COVID over the last several months. But before I do that, I want to ask you guys our icebreaker questions that we ask at the beginning of every show, just kind of get the juices flowing. Let's start with you, Kenny. Tell me your dream destination. If you could go anywhere in the world, where would that be?
Okay, well, so you mentioned golf. My husband's a avid golfer, and I am not, but I really enjoy watching it. I grew up watching it and watching my grandparents play, so it's kind of holds a special thing for me. So he really wants to go to Ireland. I would love to go there as well. And
wow,
so that's kind of, I obviously have some other items on my to-do list while he would probably be playing golf, but that's kind of our bucket list, I guess.
What a selfless,
isn't it?
Dreamed. Oh, man. I hope he gets to hear this.
Yeah, I wouldn't have any fun there as well. But yeah, so that's kind of something that we've been talking about and dreaming about for a little
Ireland.
Bit. Yeah?
Ireland. Yeah. So I've had a couple of people on the show that have gone to Ireland and actually done all the golf things go along with that. And they say it's incredible.
Yeah, yeah. I would really enjoy it. Just the history of it all. So, yeah.
Great. Yeah. Great. Okay, so Nadia, how about you?
I think I would say Greece. I haven't been there, so I'd love to go and just see. There's so much, you know, the food, the architecture, the beaches, all of it. So I'm going to say Greece.
So Greece is a popular answer on the show here, and it's because it's such an amazing destination, right? So what is it that, because there's thousands of places you could go, so what is it about Greece that to you said, oh, this has got to be on my list?
I think it's just, you know, you always see these amazing pictures of the coast and, you know, the beautiful white buildings with the blue skies and the blue water. You know, I've been to Italy, I've been to Spain, I've been to some really great places in Europe, but I haven't made it to Greece yet. And, you know, I think that's kind of it, the history behind it all. It's been there for a long time. So I'd love to go and explore it.
Great, great. Well, both of those are great answers, and both over in Europe.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Well, like minds, I guess.
I think so. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, those are really good answers, like I said. Let's go to your favorite trip you've ever been on. Kenny, so help me if this is a golf answer. I think that's just too selfless.
Okay, yeah, not a golf answer. this one's really tough, and I did try to think it through, and I don't know. One place that we really enjoy going that we've been several times and will continue to go is Charleston, South Carolina.
Oh, don't get me started.
I mean, there's some similarities to Oxford. Oxford has really great food, which we'll get into later. And every time that we travel someplace, I say, this was all right, but I could have had a better meal in Oxford, which I don't think a lot of people can say for their hometown.
Uh-huh.
So I'm really prideful of that. But that's one place that I can't always get it as, you know, as good at home. And so I love food. And so I love a lot of restaurants there. And again, the history. So I'm a sucker for tourism. That's why I'm in the industry.
That's right. That's...
And I love tours, and they do a great job there.
So did you do the horse and buggy tour?
Oh, yeah. I've done that several times. I've done a lot of the house tours. Really enjoy those. So, yeah.
So my wife and I went last year to mm-hmm. Charleston, and we started the year before we did Savannah and Hilton Head.
Yes.
And then the next year we're like, we want more. Mm-hmm. And so we came back to Charleston. Yeah. And man, I love that area of the country.
It. Well, and it's also a college town, so I think that might be part of, you know, why I enjoy it so much. But I do. I just love that area.
Fried green tomatoes.
Oh, so good. They have some great mixologists and bars too. So, you know, it's just a fun place to go.
Yeah. Yeah. Great vacation.
It. Yeah.
Okay. Nadia, how about you?
I guess I would say London is my favorite city. I got to live there for a summer in college, and so I would always put London up there. It's a great big city, but it has so many different pockets and neighborhoods that you can kind of find your place, and it's something I think that everyone should. It was also the first time I really traveled by myself outside of Mississippi.
That's quite the first trip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I did speak at least an English-speaking country.
That's true.
So it was a little safer for me.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was a great experience. I also got to live on Kensington High Street, right across from Kensington Palace. So it was kind of a once-in-a-lifetime experience, too.
Awesome. Awesome. I've heard a lot of people just love London. I've actually never been to Europe. I feel like I've been a lot of places, but Europe is not one of them. And the way people talk about it, it's the passion that people have for the places they visit in Europe is kind of interesting. Mm. Have you ever been to Europe, Kenny?
I have not.
You and me separately need to figure out our schedules and get over to Europe.
I know. We do a lot of international sales to Europe, and all of our reps there, they're ready to entertain me. So I don't know how I haven't been yet, but I'll get there soon.
And I was actually just telling one of our coworkers yesterday that as I grew up in Oxford, Mississippi, but I didn't really enjoy the blues until I lived in London. There was a blues cafe bar there that we would go to all the time. And that's kind of where I really, I guess, appreciated it and kind of fell in love with it. So,
isn't that funny?
Yeah. All the way from Mississippi to London. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about each of your backgrounds and how you got into tourism. I love hearing how people got into tourism because it's always such a unique journey for everybody. I think I've had a handful of people that studied tourism and knew they were going into tourism, and the rest had this different path, right? So maybe, Nadia, why don't we stick with you and have you tell us your background and how you got into tourism?
Sure. I definitely did not. I studied international business in college and never really thought about tourism that much. So I went into sales and marketing, and there was an opportunity to work at a hotel on campus doing sales and marketing. And so I took that opportunity and loved it and moved over to the operations side and was there for 12 years. And then this opportunity came about, and it was just really, I guess, time for a change. And I had worked with Kenny in this office over the years for so much, and it just seemed kind of like a natural fit. So I hopped over here, and it's been kind of a real easy transition, I think. There was a lot of crossover, so I kind of just fell into it, I would say. But yeah. Fell in love, too.
Awesome. And I bet being in the hotel industry for so long helped prepare you for this role.
For sure. You know, it's a different perspective. I had always seen it from that hotelier side. And so I think it's good to, I can kind of bring that perspective to this, but also see the bigger picture of what this office does and what tourism is about, not just from the hotelier standpoint.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Kenny, how about you?
All right. So I am not sure that I really knew what a visitor center or a convention and visitors bureau was as I was growing up and preparing for careers. So I definitely wouldn't say that I went into college thinking that this would be my career path. I did major in hospitality management, though.
Okay.
So very close. Right out of school was an event planner, which I absolutely loved.
Now, what type of event planner?
So my first job was at a country club.
Nice.
Yeah, so lots of weddings, lots of kids' birthday parties, things like that, wine dinners, you know, all of that came into play. Ladies' bridge clubs, very interesting. But I really did love it. I loved the relationships that I made with people, and especially the weddings. You know, that's kind of big day in their life, and so I was part of it, and so we were kind of connected forever after that. So I really loved that part of it. The hours are tough,
yeah,
especially if you have anyone else that lives in the house with you that might not have those same hours. So it just wasn't a good fit for long term. Then a college friend of mine worked for the CVB. She actually still works for our convention center.
Oh, really?
Here, our conference center here. I was moving from Tupelo, my hometown, which is just 45 miles to the east.
That's my next stop.
Yeah,
actually.
Oh, perfect.
Yep, we're recording
perfect.
With Tupelo
yeah.
this afternoon.
Birthplace of Elvis and me, but
the two important.
They leave me out when they say that. I'm not sure why yet, but yeah. So moved over to Oxford and was contacted by a friend from school about the job opening here, and I've been here, like I said, for 10 years, and kind of fell into different promotions, and here I am as director, and I don't know that I could do anything else yep. besides destination marketing now. So.
It's funny how I hear the different paths everybody takes, but once people get here, so many of them say, mm-hmm. I can't imagine doing anything else. You know, we discovered tourism in 2012, and at the time, our agency didn't even know about mm-hmm. the tourism industry, right? And now over the years, we've modified our entire business to focus on destination marketing because we feel the same way.
Yeah, I understand completely.
So I would imagine the event planning job surprisingly helped you prepare a lot for what you do today and helping people have a wonderful trip.
That's right.
Oxford is a wonderful trip. So tell me a little bit about Oxford and when you're helping people plan their trip to Oxford, not that you're a travel agent, but people call and ask for information. So how do you craft that into a great experience for the visitor?
Sure. You know, Oxford has a lot to offer. Our kind of main focus is usually on a leisure visitor, which just fits our market the best. So a lot of what we are doing is trying to make sure that leisure visitors understand what they have that they can do here. So I mentioned this before. We have a wonderful dining experience.
I agree.
Okay, yeah. So we have two James Beard Award-winning chefs. We have a James Beard Award winning. We have two writers who have won James Beard Awards that live in this town. So for a town of about 23,000 residents, four James Beard winners.
That's pretty
kind
incredible.
Of a big deal, especially in a little town, not on a major interstate in Mississippi. So, you know, we understand that where we are and understand that we have challenges of people getting to us sometimes, but we think that once they get here, they definitely want to come back. So, you know, we market to the leisure visitor a lot and obviously push food. And then we also push the experience of kind of a laid back small town atmosphere, but with kind of upscale, sophisticated amenities. Being a college town, we're kind of afforded some amenities that I feel like other towns around us might not have the opportunities to take advantage of. So we do have kind of an influx of 20,000 extra citizens when school's in session and we have all their parents that come to visit. So that pumps a lot of money into our town. It also costs us a lot of money for security and other things, but it definitely gives us the opportunities to have really great amenities. One of those is William Faulkner's home.
I wanted to talk here. About that. Yeah. So we are sitting in William Faulkner's home, right?
No. So this building that we're sitting in right now that our visitor center is located in is an old law firm. So it's a building that was constructed in the late 1800s and has been a law firm until we took over this area about 5 years ago. But the importance that it has to Faulkner is that his mentor, who really appreciated him for who he was when most people did not, his mentor was Phil Stone. And so he was an attorney here. And if you are in Oxford, so when you come to Oxford, we'll show you this, but it's kind of a straight cut from our building to his home, really, if you wanted to kind of go a back ways route. So I can kind of show you how that would work later. We have a Faulkner's Alley on our square, and he was a bit of an introvert, so he would kind of go the off the beaten path to come into town. And yeah, so he would come here and talk with Mr. Stone and also the manuscripts for Hollywood, for his novels that were later became movies. Those were all transcribed here by legal secretaries of Mr. Stone up in the front visitor center area. So you can come here and get a little Faulkner history while you're also planning out your trip.
Yeah, and that makes this visitor center pretty unique, right? Because you're walking into a very historic building. And Nadia, you were, for those that may not know who William Faulkner is, and I know most people do, I, however, was one that did not. And so for those that aren't, can you just tell everybody kind of who William Faulkner is?
Sure. I mean, he is a Nobel Prize winning author. Like Kenny said, he was a bit of an introvert and was probably not appreciated by all. But he is very famous for a lot of his works. You know, we, of course, had to read lots of Faulkner in high school. And, you know, at one point someone said you're either a Faulkner or a Hemingway fan. And I quickly realized I was a Hemingway fan. I couldn't keep up with Faulkner. But certainly appreciate all that he did and appreciate now the history that he created. You know, you can go and during non-COVID times, take a tour of his home and see the room where he wrote the outline for one of his books on the walls of the room, which is just crazy.
Yeah.
But that was the kind of person he was.
And you can still see that on the wall.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yes. In the property, you can go still and walk the grounds of the property now, even though the house isn't open for tours. And it's a beautiful property. So it's just, it's a nice piece of history that puts us on the map for something else. Lots of, there's a Faulkner conference every year where people come from all over the world and talk about Faulkner and the impact that he had. So we're very grateful for that.
So I think that's a great piece of history. It's part of what makes Oxford unique. But I feel like when you look at Oxford in the state of Mississippi, it's a very unique community. I mean, I'm going to irritate some Mississippi State fans, but like you drive into Starkville and it doesn't feel like you're an hour and a half from Oxford. It feels like you're a state away from Oxford. And it's a very unique community within the state of Mississippi. So what is it that makes Oxford so unique beyond dining and William Faulkner?
Well, I think that, you know, I've always said that Oxford's the only place in Mississippi that I would live because it is so special and unique. I think one other thing that helps us is we do have the University of Mississippi. And like Kenny said, that does bring us a lot of opportunities, a lot of diversity, you know, a lot of educational opportunities that some other places don't have. You know, there's a really great arts scene here, whether that's music or other types of art that aren't in a lot of places. So we get a lot of opportunity to see musicians or artists or sculptors who come through, and you know, it's just not something you see every day in other places.
Yeah.
So I definitely think the university helps a lot, and then obviously the dining, the bar scene, the college kids. We're also one of the top retirees towns, so you've got the college kids, and then I think those retirees who wanted to come back and experience or relive their youth a little bit through the eyes of others. So that's kind of what makes it special as well. It's a small community, but we have a lot of opportunities.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you one of the most unique experiences I've ever had, and that was the Grove on game day. And you cannot tell me this is a city of 20,000 people on game day.
Definitely not on game day. It's the holy grail of tailgating, I think it's been called. So, you know, normally during Grove season, Trash Can Friday is a big thing where they put out the red and blue trash cans and they, you know, start waiting to get their spot for their tailgate. And I mean, you can probably see 50,000 people in that 8-acre park on campus. So it's a once in a lifetime experience. So,
and Kenny, I've got to imagine that the game day experience here has so much to do with how many people are willing to visit Oxford. So tell me a little bit about that.
Yes, interesting that you say that, because what we've noticed here over the last probably 6 years is that we have become a bit of a bucket list for a lot of groups, especially like groups of men that travel. A lot of the things that we market to here seem to be female focused, not because we prefer that gender to the other. It just is to kind of what we have in
well,
what it
traditionally that's
to.
Been the travel decision
yeah,
maker, right?
It's just that's kind of the way it works. But we have these groups of guys that come in that have no affiliation with Ole Miss or the University of Mississippi. They a lot of times have never been to Mississippi, and the kicker is they aren't cheering for the other team. So they're not our opponent's fan base. And so that leads us to asking, as destination marketers, a lot of questions of them, you know, how did you find out about us? Why did you pick this? And every time they always say, and I mean, this is countless groups. This isn't just a few people who come in here and there, but they always say, well, we wanted to visit a college football experience in the SEC. So we picked Ole Miss. And so I know that other schools experience the same. I'm not being naive to think that they don't, but I do think that we see that a lot. And I think it's because of what Ole Miss and Oxford have to offer to one another.
Yeah.
And, you know, the town and gown relationship really is strong here. I feel like we complement each other. One wouldn't be what it is without the other.
Well, and I've seen several destinations that are college towns, And it doesn't feel as united as maybe Ole Miss is so synonymous with Oxford, mm-hmm. whereas some other places, you might even find that the residents push against the university, right?
Sure.
And this is what I feel like is a huge advantage of having an asset like a university, the sense of community pride that comes along with having a university and being a fan of that university. There's got to be some real benefits to that, especially as it pertains to getting people to come back and spend money in the market over time.
Absolutely. So I mentioned earlier the parents of the college students. So the university is doing a really good job of course, you know, they market to those, the children or their legacies, the children of their alumni base, but they've done a wonderful job within the last several years of really getting out in front of new people who that might not know about Ole Miss or know about Mississippi altogether. And so as we're seeing these new students coming from different places, a lot of students from the Atlanta area, a lot of students from the Dallas-Fort Worth area, when we see this, then we see their parents come. And so as their parents come, then they go back and tell their friends. And, you know, it's just a trickle effect. And so we have some ambassadors kind of all over the country for our destination because of the college, you know? And so, yeah, it's a great relationship all around.
So it's interesting to hear you talk about that dynamic, because I don't think every college town understands how the way the university communicates and markets to the students affects the destination's brand, right? You, for example, hottie toddy, right? That is a term that to anyone else doesn't mean anything at all. And I've asked so many people here in Oxford what it means. And they're like, it's just what we say, you know? And so, Nadia, my question to you is, how have you been able to marry your efforts with the university's efforts and actually work together with them to have them understand how they fit into the brand?
Sure. I mean, I think constant communication is part of it. And I think both of us understand the importance that the other holds. You know, Ole Miss is where people attended college, but they live here in Oxford. And vice versa, you know, so they get the diploma from Ole Miss, but they've got to come back to Oxford and see all that we have to offer as well. And we do try to, from all aspects, be in communication with the university and their leadership and stay on the same message. And because it always has an effect on the other. And I think leadership on both sides, from the city and from the university, do a great job with that, and understanding that there's going to be challenges and kind of working through those challenges and trying to capitalize on what we have and the momentum. So
good.
Yeah.
Good. So let's shift gears a little bit from the university. We've talked about that a lot. How about, I mean, you talk about your dining scene, and you've got an incredible dining scene. Kenny, you mentioned the awards that have been won here and how like the saturation of award-winning chefs and writers here is different than almost any other market. Tell me about the restaurant scene here. Maybe highlight some of the restaurants that are most recognized or that you get the most feedback from visitors on. And walk us through that, because I think the dining scene here is top-notch.
Absolutely. I will be happy to do that. We talked about the James Beard award-winning chefs, and I did want to touch on one thing that I think is partly the reason why we might have so many James Beard award-winning chefs, and it does kind of go back to the university a little bit. We are home to the Southern Foodways Alliance, which is an organization that studies the history of food.
Oh.
And so they chronicle why Southern food is what it is and where those roots came from. And so they do oral histories, written histories. All of this is out of the Center for Southern Studies at the university. And they have a symposium every year. And they have board members and members across the nation that come in to Oxford and experience Oxford for all that it is. And I really do think that we've gotten a lot of attention on our food scene because it is so great, but I do think that's kind of helped breed new people. So
yeah.
City Grocery is kind of our, one of our flagship restaurants, really, that kind of started the scene here. It's a fine dining restaurant. It's located right in the heart of the square. It's owned by John Currents, who was our first James Beard award-winning chef. So definitely, they're famous for shrimp and grits. And so we always suggest that people go there. He spent a lot of time in New Orleans. So you'll see kind of a little bit of that in everything that is happening, I feel like, across the board in his restaurants. So you mentioned Bure before we started recording that you ate there last night, and that's another one of John Currents' restaurants. So you'll see, you know, you might have noticed the Cajun flair sort
Absolutely.
Of in their dishes. And Snack Bar and Big Bad Breakfast are the other two.
Oh, I haven't been to either of those.
You're missing out. So those are located just kind of north of the square, easy walk from the square, or if you're staying kind of at either of the downtown hotels. We get a lot of attention about that. What college town would not have a great burger and barbecue joint, right? So Handy Andy, that's been around forever. Nadia grew up here. She probably has grown up eating that. It was one of my favorite places. It's also great for the college budget. Nice. But always if people ask, kind of, where do I get Mississippi barbecue when they're here? So we always kind of tell people that. And then where you're going to go to lunch in a little bit, Ajax Diner.
My favorite.
it's just our kind of ultimate meet and three. And if you're listening and have no idea what a meet and three is, then you need to come to Mississippi or really anywhere in the South and we'll show you.
And Ajax, that's the place. I can't come to Oxford without going to Ajax anymore.
I understand.
And I've probably been there more than some of the restaurants in Utah.
Where I love it. I love it. Yeah. So you can get, you know, the meat and three vegetables, and then obviously a meat. And then, you know, we joke the vegetables are basically how many starches can you get on a plate, but they're all so good. And they also have kind of traditional North Mississippi catfish, which is, you know, kind of a little different than other places. So, yeah.
Well, those are, sounds like a great product. So Nadia, my question to you then is, how do you market dining? When dining is one of your major attractions, how do you market dining and who do you market that to?
So, I mean, I think that when we're marketing dining, a picture is worth a thousand words. And so a lot of times we use that.
So do you bring in professional food photographers or do you require the restaurants to do that? What? Tell me logistically how that works.
A little bit of both. I mean, if they have hired someone to come in and take pictures and are willing to share, we always take that. But we also hire photographers to go in and take pictures because sometimes when we're dining, it's hard to remember to take a picture. Make it look as good as it is. But we do have some photographers that we work with come in and take some great photos that really shows what you can't taste. So we do a lot to those leisure travelers and really show them what they're missing out on.
How far have you found that people will go to dine?
Oh.
Or will they book an entire vacation around dining?
Yes. I mean, we have itineraries that are basically all the places you need to go and dine, you know, breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks in between, and dessert on the end. So we
awesome.
Definitely do that, too.
Awesome. Well, we're going to have to say bye to Kenny. I know that she's got a previous engagement that she's got to run for. This is the dangers of doing the podcast in person. But Kenny, that's thank right. you so much for your time today.
Absolutely. Adam, thank you for your interest in Oxford and for keeping on coming back. So we're glad to host you for a little bit longer today, and I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot. All right. It's all you, Nadia. It's
no
all
pressure.
On you now. So tell me about your visitor. You guys obviously have done work to figure out who that visitor is and what their interests are. So tell me who Oxford's core visitor is.
Sure. So, you know, it's a kind of a mixed bag. I mean, with the university, we do get a lot of people who've just graduated, who are coming back, who want to relive those 4 or 5 years that they spent here. And then, you know, we do get a lot of retirees who kind of want to come back. So we generally find that most of our travelers and visitors are well-educated, college-educated, have a little bit higher income, a little discretionary income to spend on all the great places here in Oxford. And of course, mainly from the Southeast, but we do get visitors from all over. We just fulfilled some tour requests, visitor guide requests from South Korea and Sweden.
Wow.
So kind of all over the place. But we do kind of have a very unique visitor profile. And they want to come and usually spend 2 to 3 nights here so they can enjoy all of the different dining options and shopping and tours and, you know, all the history here.
Great. Great. Okay, let's talk about COVID. We're going to have to do it. We have no choice.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to stop talking about COVID, but it's the gift that keeps on taking.
Yes, it does.
So tell me what your experience has been with COVID and how you guys have been proactive in combating the drop in tourism?
Yeah, so I think that, you know, it became real to us kind of February when the city came to us and said, you know, every department has to create this pandemic plan. So if this happens, we need to be ready. And we, you know, of course, did our due diligence, but kind of laughed about it almost a little bit because we never thought that it would be. You always hear about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, mid-March, of course, we realized.
Can I stop you real quick?
Yeah.
So I find it interesting that in February, because most of the people I've talked to, it didn't become real mm-hmm. until March, including me.
Mm-hmm.
So in February, your city leaders were coming to you saying, hey, we've got to be ready for this.
Yep.
That's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm. It has been very impressive from my perspective. I think that we have been very proactive on every front. You know, so we got those plans in place, and then mid-March is when we got stay-at-home orders and started working from home and learned what Zoom was. We signed up for an account. And, you know, we actually, our city leaders enacted a mask mandate in April. We were kind of one of the first ones that did it. And from the visitor center's perspective, you know, we said kind of what can we do to help the community? And one thing we knew was, you know, the mask mandate was coming. So we have a very beloved festival that happens the last weekend in April every year. It's a double-decker arts festival. And it's a great weekend of arts, music, shopping, fun, food, all those great things. And we realized that was not going to happen. And so we had all these t-shirts. We had 7,000 t-shirts that we would normally sell. They obviously had the dates on them. We knew we wouldn't be able to sell that many. No matter how much people wanted them, they weren't going to do that. So we partnered actually with the local Chick-fil-A, who had some money set aside for COVID relief for the community. And we had those t-shirts made into face coverings.
Oh.
And we set up drive-throughs at the local high school. And we gave out 4 per car. And we gave out all of the masks.
No way.
So that was something kind of creative that we were able to help with.
Now, did Chick-fil-A reach out to you guys? Or were you reaching out to stakeholders? How did that work?
I think that, because Kenny kind of took the lead on that, but I believe that the local Chick-fil-A, he used to actually be on our tourism board.
Oh, so he
so
understands.
So we have a good relationship,
yeah.
And he said, you know, I have this money, and I'd like to do something for the community. Do you have any ideas? And I think Kenny, you know, kind of sat up in the middle of the night at midnight and was like, we can make face coverings. So we took our materials, his money, to pay for it. He came and picked up the 15 boxes of t-shirts, drove them to Memphis where they were laser cut. And, you know, we handed them out during 2 times at the local high school. So,
wow.
Yeah. You know, and we also had our city leadership reached out to Cathead Vodka. They quickly realized that they could help by, instead of distilling vodka, they could make hand sanitizer. So we also did that with the city and helped hand out hand sanitizer to the community. In a time where you couldn't get any hand
right.
sanitizer anywhere.
It was nowhere, yeah.
Yeah. So those were a couple of efforts that we helped with, giving out the hand sanitizer and then the face masks, too.
So when that mask mandate came out, mm-hmm. what was that like as far as from a tourism perspective? Because one of the things that is scary about a mask mandate is that your visitors didn't see it in the news when the legislation came out. They had no idea there was a mask mandate. I mean, some of them I'm sure did, but you can't expect a visitor to understand what's happening locally, right? So how were you able to communicate that with visitors and make sure that it wasn't a poor customer experience?
Right. Well, you know, with customer service, you can't please everyone all the time.
Right.
But we obviously reached out to our stakeholders, you know, and got their feedback and found out that they did have people coming into town who said they had no idea. They didn't have a mask. Some of them, you know, had some handy. They brought extra, and so they were giving them to patrons. But we did kind of do a social media campaign for a while that just was raising awareness. We created a landing page on our website, which is Visit Oxford Safely. That kind of gave a rundown of what was expected when you come to town, that you can still come here and enjoy all that Oxford has, but you need to know what to have when you come here. And one of those things is a face mask. So that really seemed to get the message out and people started learning. So that was helpful.
Yeah. Good. So COVID is, it's not over. Mm-hmm. We're hoping this isn't the new normal. Mm-hmm. And yet we've been in it for long enough that certain things are starting to feel normal, right? And so from a marketing perspective, do you feel like you guys are kind of settling into what your strategy is going to be moving forward?
Yeah, I think that, you know, we've all made the joke that things change by the hour, and they certainly do. But, you know, we've kind of looked at the research. We've listened to all of the webinars that we can and looked at industry partners for their guidance as well at what other places are doing to kind of get our messaging across. You know, overall, Oxford is still a very safe place to visit. And like I said, we've been very proactive from the beginning. When other places weren't even thinking of a mask mandate, we already had it in place. And so definitely people in the community are used to wearing those masks, and, you know, shop owners and restaurant owners, you know, are quick to say, oh, I'm so sorry, you need to have a mask to come in. And very diligent about it. So I think that is great. And then, so right now we're just shifting our focus to let people know that they can come and have a great experience in Oxford safely.
So still a message centered around safe. You can be safe here.
Yes.
Okay.
We just recently redid our Visit Oxford Safely page to create some kind of portals for, you know, eat Oxford safely, shop Oxford safely, stay Oxford safely. And created a partner pledge, which we aptly named the Oxford Oath.
I like it.
Where we have asked our industry partners to sign this oath, you know, that they're going to abide by the guidelines of the CDC, the Mississippi Department of Health, and the local ordinances to keep everyone safe and to really just stay open. You know, and of course, we ask that visitors and patrons do the same, you know. So that has gone over well, and we're still kind of in the works of that as well.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, it's a crazy time, but one thing that impresses me about what you guys have done is be so proactive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we've also renewed partnerships with we have a great Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Foundation. We've worked hand in hand with them from the beginning. You know, we share information on what's open, you know, the hours, if it's curbside only, you know, all of those things. And also with our local arts council, the Ocknopatawpha Arts Council, we obviously can't do a lot of events right now.
Right.
So we started something in June called Tunes Around Town, which is a socially distant way of enjoying some music.
Nice.
Where we set up artists, and it gives the musicians a great opportunity to actually perform live for people, which they haven't done.
They haven't been able to do. Yeah.
So, and also give them a little bit of pocket change as well. Mm-hmm. So we've had, you know, four or five locations around the downtown area where a musician sets up and plays for about 2 hours. And, you know, we encourage people to social distance and wear masks. And, you know, it's hopefully giving a boost to the local economy as well. Restaurants and shops staying open a little bit later. So that helps. And we are continuing that. And also just trying smaller events that we can plan safely going into the fall for some of these football weekends.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about a lot. Mm-hmm. We've gone through a lot. I'm going to ask you for two pieces of advice. Okay. And this is for destinations listening that may be going through the same challenges you are, right? So first, you guys have built an amazing brand here in Oxford. And, you know, the way you utilize the university, your assets, you know, it sounds like your relationship with political partners is really good, and you know, the Chamber of Commerce. So a destination that wants to basically build what you guys have built from a branding standpoint, where would you start?
Oh, gosh. you know, I grew up here. I'm very biased and think that Oxford is a little gemstone. And I do think we have a great product. But I go back to relationship building. That's kind of the key point to everything. I guess that's also my sales background. But building those relationships, and not just when it's you need something, you know, but going that extra mile and checking on people or asking how you can help and be of assistance all the time. And then, so then when you call them, they actually answer the phone and can help you.
Yeah. Relationships are built before the crisis.
That's right. Absolutely.
And the second piece of advice, and by the way, great advice. the second piece of advice is COVID. Mm-hmm. People who are struggling going through COVID, you guys have obviously been proactive. What advice would you give destinations trying to figure out what to do next?
I think it goes back to that first piece of advice of relationship building and talking to partners in your town or your destination. You know, you don't always have to recreate the wheel. And so just having those conversations and saying, you know, what can we do? What do you have contacts with? You know, do you have any ideas? Some of these ideas have come up just from those conversations. And so I think that's kind of the biggest thing is be open to conversations and thinking outside of the box. And just because we normally have a festival in April of 55,000, that's obviously not possible right now. So what can we do to help our local economy and businesses and still be safe? So thinking outside of the box and having conversations with other people that maybe wouldn't always have those conversations with. Because I think there are plenty of people who are sitting at home who have ideas and resources and they want to help as well.
Is it safe to say then that most of the challenges we deal with could be solved through building better relationships?
I 100% believe that. I do.
Well, I think it's great advice. And the most important thing for people to remember is that the time to build those relationships is yesterday, but you can settle for today.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely.
So, well, this has been great. I really appreciate it, Nadia. We've gotten some great advice from you and from Kenny, and boy, am I excited to go eat some lunch.
I know. I hope you planned a nap after.
Well, I'll be driving, so it's not a great combination.
We'll get you some coffee. We'll get you an affogato or something for the road.
Nice. Well, tell us where we can find more information about Oxford.
Sure. We're very active on all of our social media channels, which is Visit Oxford MS on all handles. And then our website is visitoxfordms.com. And there's lots of information there as well on what we have upcoming and what we can do to help and what you can do to plan your next trip to Oxford.
Great. Great. Well, thank you so much, Nadia.
Thank you, Adam. Thanks for stopping in.
And for those listening, this has been another episode of the Destination Marketing Podcast on the road. And if you would like the Destination Marketing Podcast to come to your destination and feature your destination, send me an email, adam@relicagency.com. Other than that, thanks for listening and have a great week. Okay, guys, since we started the Destination Marketing Podcast a little over a year ago, I've had several destinations reach out and say, hey, could you help me start a podcast? And at first we were kind of like, well, no, that's not really what we do. But after enough requests, we said, you know what, let's explore this. And we've created a turnkey program for destinations where we will produce, we will host, we will edit, and we will publish your podcast for your destination on a weekly, bi-weekly, or monthly basis. And all you have to do is show up and answer some questions. We're really excited about this program. We've got a few destinations that have been doing really, really well with their podcast. And if you've ever thought about creating a podcast for your destination, but you don't have all the equipment or you don't have the expertise or any of that type of stuff, let us take that off your hands. Let Relic handle your podcast creation and production. And all you have to do is show up and answer questions about all the amazing things there are to do within your destination. So let me know if you're interested. Email me at adam@relicagency.com and we'll get you set up on this podcast program.